I have said many times around Dark Side of the Ring and about Dark Side of the Ring that you need a certain arc, don't you? There's no point in saying this person had a really good childhood, then came into wrestling, worked his way up to the top and stayed there and was nice to everybody and everybody thought he was lovely. That's not going to make for a very good program, is it? There is a saying in the media, if it bleeds, it leads. And what that means in general is that if there's a very visceral storyline, that's going to help. This is the way that it usually goes with Dark Side of the Ring. And actually, although we had Brutai, the barber, and Leslie, living a great life with the love of his life, doing fan conventions, which really feeds into the way that he loves to talk to people, generally you get this, and I've told you before many times, you get, they're desperate to wrestle, they become wrestlers, they do well in the ring, they're very popular, something happens to make them less popular, they either die or continue to be unpopular because they make themselves unpopular and can't be used by promoters, or they're injured, or they have a redemptive storyline, a la Ed Leslie. This one is the former, and it's called The Gentleman and the Demon, because what they're saying about Chris Adams, Gentleman Chris Adams, I mean, the originator of the super kick, in my view, because I'm watching him in Portland, 1982, at the moment, and it's only just been called the super kick. When he first did it, they just called it a quick kick, I think. I think he called it a quick kick, and then it became the super kick. Hugely popular, mainly in World Class Championship Wrestling, and then moved on to Global, the Global Wrestling Federation. That's right, I've been watching that as well recently. And it was the Law of Diminishing Returns after that. What they're saying here is that on this program, they are saying that when he became drunk, he became some kind of animal. And what they keep showing is representations of what he might look like in shadow, but with red eyes. Because somebody says his eyes glowed red. I don't know if that's the case, but certainly adds to the program, doesn't it? And this is an extremely sad story, has to be said, really, really sad. Because he came from England. He learnt with his brother, younger brother. He was twice silver medalist at the Olympics for the UK, for Britain, yes. And he fought in British wrestling with, you know, Big Daddy and when Giant Haystacks and Big Daddy were ruling the world in UK wrestling, i.e. the fag end of UK wrestling, as we call it in England, the end of that thing. I think when Big Daddy really started to become popular and have his TV show on a Saturday morning, kids show, I tended to think, that's the end of things, isn't it? And it slowly was. Anyway, he then went to the States, and I had not realised that his girlfriend at the time, Jeannie, who later became the wife of Stone Cold Steve Austin, who's heavily involved in this story. We don't see him on the programme, which is a shame, actually, but we do hear recorded comments from him. I thought she was American. But they met in England and they moved over to LA and had a great time in LA. And they had a child together, Jade, and we see his daughter Jade interviewed quite heavily in this programme. And then what Jeannie tells us is that, you know, he was off for wrestling around, you know, coming home less and less, and she realised that he might be looking for female company in other places and all of that. She went to the UK, by the way, to give birth to Jade. He was in Mexico at the time and then came back, and she gets upset when she talks about that, which is, you know, he's touched an awful lot of lives. And the whole idea of this program is that he was a gentleman and a lovely bloke, but also when he drank, he was a demon. They keep pushing this without really pushing it enough to become a branded item. So we do see people like Kevin Von Erich, should I say, who's the only Von Erich child alive now, I think, isn't he? From Kerry and David and, you know, and the rest. We see David Manning, who, of course, was heavily involved in World Class Championship Wrestling. We see Iceman Parsons, who looks good, actually. Iceman King Parsons, if you like, looks very good. He was with him in WCCW and also in the GWF. And he became a big wheel in the WCCW, which was already a big promotion. And as Kevin says, it's a very telling line, this, actually, not just for Chris Adams, but for others. Wrestlers are usually ex-bullies from high school. Chris was that way too. And they then talk about the eyes shining red. At one point, he says, and I couldn't quite work out whether or not this was the person who brought him to the event or not, but he turned up late to an event. He was being driven by a woman who he was maybe friends with or seeing or whatever, and he blamed her for getting there late. It was a big thing to be late for WCCW, and I think it's either he choked her or choked somebody else who got involved and almost killed them, and that was without any kind of drink or without any kind of drugs. And of course he formed a tag team with Gino Hernandez and was incredibly they were incredibly popular, but they egged each other on, and there were lots of extracurricular activities, lots of coke, lots of women. Iceman Parsons talks about they had coke in one room, women in the other, and Gino died of an overdose of medicated substances, it's thought, in 1986. And Iceman Parsons says he tried to calm Adams down, but just couldn't, and he started to drink a lot more. At one point, he was in an altercation with a bartender, super kicked the bartender, whose eye came out. Now, at that point, you kind of think, it's the story that Dark Side of the Ring want, isn't it? He really, people tried to help him, and he wouldn't take that help. Jay's got some very good words for Tony Adams, who he met, and they have a child together, Chris Adams Jr. But then when he's on a flight from Puerto Rico, all the wrestlers are on there. There's a massive delay on the flight. They're all on the plane. And to kind of make them feel better, alcohol is served. And eventually, Chris Adams headbutts a pilot, and who I hope didn't fly after that, and serves some jail time. And of course, WCW get bad publicity from that. They also talk about his coaching and training, and he had we see him doing a video for an advert for training school, and he did train Steve Williams, who of course is Steve Austin. They have a storyline which is a bit like Kevin Sullivan and Woman, really, and Chris Benoit. We know how that ended, which is extremely sad and tragic and awful, but it's similar to that situation where Chris Adams brings Jeannie, his ex, into a worked angle about with Tony, about the two women fighting and the two men fighting and all of that, and then they get together, do Steve Williams, Austin and Jeannie in reality, and then they both go to WCW, and I remember them being there. I remember Austin having a belt there, and what people say is that Chris Adams is not in the big time yet. And he's very angry that someone he's trained, and he's very upset and starts to drink because someone he's trained, he's drinking more because of this. Someone he trained is going to WCW and he's not. And eventually he attacks Tony as well, and she takes the son and leaves. And he went to GWF and then went to WCW in 1987 and thought, this is it, this is my time in the big time. However, as we see, he was used as a jobber, as Jeannie says. You know, we see him breaking the giant, you know, Paul White, Big Show, the giant's cigarette break. I'd forgotten that. He had an angle where he smoked. He's having a cigarette in the ring, in the corner. Chris Adams breaks that up, and of course he gets dispatched in short order. and didn't get any wins, and was soon fired because of a DUI, and then started to take GHB, which is popular throughout the wrestling fraternity with wrestlers, but you have to be careful how much you take. And he then has nowhere to live and moves in with a fan, Bure. Now, Bure is a tragic figure here because he will experience the end of this story in two awful ways. So Chris meets a woman called Linda, who Bure says was lovely. They come back to the house one night. He goes to bed. They have had GHB there, splitting it in drinks, because it's a dropper, a liquid. And in the morning he wakes up, does Bure, where he lives with his mum actually, wakes up and they're both comatose, tries to wake them up. They're both in a comatose state, and Linda isn't breathing. He rings 911 and they can't save Linda and she dies, which of course really upsets. I mean, Bure experiences that, of course, and also so he lives with that every day, and it sent Chris Adams into even more drinking. At one point where we see Bure upset and almost crying, and we've got church organ music in the background. We don't need this kind of mawkish stuff. The story is big enough anyway, isn't it? And they tend to do that Dark Side of the Ring, and I don't think that really... And also, I'm not sure about Chris Jericho's narration. It's becoming more mawkish every episode, really. But then, you've not got a lot to work with, have you, when really all you're talking about is these kind of stories. We do need a different story where maybe we talk about a promotion that didn't work or something like that, or more of an uplifting story perhaps. We're not going to get that, are we? Because this is what sells, I suppose. Now, Chris was charged with manslaughter, started drinking even more, and then one night goes to see Bure. They have some drinks. He then gets angry with Bure, and according to Bure, breaks one of the posts off his four-poster bed, goes to hit him with it, puts him in a sleeper, gouges his eyes, bites him. Bure has a gun by the side of his bed, shoots him, but he says he put the gun near his shoulder to shoot Chris Adams in the shoulder to stop him, ostensibly. Chris jumped a little and it shot him directly through the heart. The jury called it self-defense. He was before a grand jury. Chris's brother doesn't believe that, but my word. I mean, Bure's in a very short period of time going through an extraordinary situation, and it's very sad at the end because they tell us what a great turnout at the funeral it was. But yeah, but you're a long time looking at the lid, aren't you? And Jay says that she wants her father to be remembered as a great athlete and a loving father, and we see those home videos, but the story that's being told by Dark Side of the Ring isn't about that. It's about, look at this guy who got killed, responsible for someone's death, perhaps, drugger, drinker. It's not about the wrestling, it's about the stuff outside of the ring, isn't it? We don't see very much of the wrestling. We don't see very much of the wrestling matches. We don't see what extraordinary athletic athlete he was, although it's mentioned with the speed and the kip-ups and all the rest of it, but we don't see that, not much. We see more of the drinking, the drugs, all of that. And that is what, unfortunately, Chris Adams, because of the media, will be remembered for. Not being a great wrestler and a loving father, sadly. But that's what happens with the media. That's what happens with 24-hour media. I'm not denigrating Dark Side of the Ring, because that is what sells. And that is what we will do. And so you can say all you like about, I want him to be remembered as a great wrestler and a great father, and that's absolutely right. But with a program on TV, or an article or a podcast these days, that's not going to happen. Ta-ta.